Hi, I'm Ahmed Shahabuddin, and welcome to The Stream. Mexico's National Guard is now under direct military control after Congress backed a bill spearheaded by the country's president. Andrés Manuel López Obrador says the move will help in the fight against violent crime. But critics are questioning his motives. Today we ask, what does military control of policing mean for Mexico? Joining us today, we have Andalucía Soloff, a journalist in Mexico City. Ana Lorena Delgadillo is deputy director at Foundation for Justice, a human rights organization. She's in Washington, D.C. And last but not least, Catalina Perez Correa is a professor and researcher at the Center for Research and Teaching of Economics. She joins us from Aguascalientes. We also, of course, want to hear your thoughts here at The Stream. So if you're watching us on YouTube, join the chat and be part of today's conversation. All right, let's get straight to it. So many questions here, really. I want to ask you, Andalucía, López Obrador really ran on a premise of sort of, ending corruption and sort of the drug war and all the violence that we've been seeing for well over a decade. Why has he made this U-turn in his pledge to kind of send the soldiers back to the barracks?
Yes, this is a question that we are all asking, especially many of the people who did vote for him. In the first few years, one of his campaign slogans and once being president was abrazos, no balazos, which means hugs, not bullets. And then the country has really been in a security crisis, not just since he took power, more the past 15 years. Since the former president, Felipe Calderón, started a militarized strategy, which has led to the death of over 200,000 people and over 100,000 people who are disappeared. But López Obrador said that he was going to break from this militarized strategy and get to the core in responding with education and more opportunities for young people, which he said was the basis of why there was so much violence. And when he was questioned a few weeks ago at his morning presidential conference by a journalist of why he has changed his mind, he basically just said, that's it. I changed my mind. I thought it didn't work, and now I changed my mind. So he didn't really give more of an explanation, more that he himself saw that his strategy of security was not working, which I do agree with. But turning to a militarized strategy is just returning to a completely failed strategy from the past.
Right, a failed strategy that his predecessors, which he criticized, of course, when he was running, know all too well that it's not a winning strategy. I want to ask you, Catalina, based on what you heard, let's actually first listen to López Obrador in his own words, as well as an opposition politician who claps back to him as he tries to justify this. Take a listen.
The purpose of this is not militarization or a move towards authoritarianism, but to take care, under the vigilance of the Defense Ministry, the healthy growth of what should be the main public security institution of the country.
We will not allow a permanent state of siege to be established in this country as the President of the Republic intends.
Catalina, what comes to mind when you hear that framed as healthy growth? Is Mexico growing healthily?
No, I think we need to understand the fact that what is happening today in Mexico and the decisions that President López Obrador is making doesn't just come out in terms of security. This has happened in a context where the president has been very openly critical to the courts that oppose his policies. To the press, and we have, you know, the most violent, one of the most violent countries against journalists during President López Obrador's government. We have had a maximum of journalists killed by organized crime or you know, unresolved crimes. And also, he's been very critic against his critics and the opposition party. So I think it's important to understand this because we're militarizing public security tasks, not just in any context, but in the context of the president becoming more and more powerful. And the National Guard is going to have a lot of different functions. Some of them, they can spy on our phones. They can spy on the internet. They will be in charge of investigating crime, of preventing crime. They'll be in charge of guarding prisons. They'll be in charge also of making accusations. So they have a very, very large amount of faculties in terms of all the powers that they're getting through these reforms.
Right, and that consolidation of power is what's so troubling, just the scale of it and sort of the speed, and raising a lot of questions of you know, what that means for Mexico in general, but also what ambitions that might reflect that you know, López Obrador might have. I do want to share with you on YouTube, we have Mark Norris saying, isn't Mexico a narco state? How can there ever be any solution when the entire political structure has been bought by the cartels? We also have other people making the point that the problem isn't necessarily whose military it is, but who actually controls it. The more you centralize the power, the greater the chance that one single person can weaponize it against anyone. That's Michael Henderson. We also heard, we invited the president's communication team to, have their viewpoint be included in this conversation. Unfortunately, we didn't hear back. But we did receive this video from the president of the Senate in Mexico. Take a listen.
Mexico has been experiencing a very difficult time in the past few years regarding security issues. Recent national studies show that the majority of Mexicans are accepting of the National Guard. That is to say that there is a level of credibility in this institution that was started during this government administration that Andrés Manuel López Obrador has been in charge of since 2018. That is why it is an issue that is so important for the lives and heritage of the Mexican people, and why the Senate has decided to strengthen this institution. We think it is necessary for a tactical operational command to exist on a federal level that works in coordination with the 32 states and the more than 2,500 municipalities.
Ana Lorena, we heard Alejandro there speaking of credibility. Is there any credibility?
Well, what we have seen is that a lot of people in Mexico support the army, and this is something that the Mexican president is using for promoting a militarization in Mexico. The thing is that people need security in our country. We agree with some of the comments of the people who had put some questions from the audience. We agree that we have a very violent situation in Mexico. We agree that we need to do something to stop it, but we think that militarization is not the way to do it. Mm-hmm. We are very concerned, for example, that the president is pushing very much the militarization, but by the other side, he's not concerned about how our judicial power or our prosecution system is working. If you see, for example, we have close to more than 100,000 people that have been disappeared in our country. Yeah. And by the side, we have only like 37 convictions for disappearances. So that gives you an idea about how is working our judicial system. If we don't put enough efforts trying to change the prosecution system in our country, mm-hmm. just imagine the army is going to detain a lot of people. After that, those people who have been detained are going to go to the federal or the local system, and the prosecution system is collapsed.
Yeah.
So what is going to happen after all of
Catalina,
this detention?
Yeah, go ahead. Yeah,
no, I just want to jump in from what the senator said. It's true that we have a very violent situation in Mexico, but mm-hmm. it's also if you see the powers that are actually giving to the National Guard and to the military, they're not only for combating organized crime. There are powers even to stop you in a traffic light and give you a parking ticket.
Right.
I mean, that there are absolute no correlation between the size of the violent problem that we have in mm-hmm. Mexico and the powers mm-hmm. that are being given. We also have this idea that a one-size-fits-all solution to the crimes in Mexico is going to be, you know, helpful. When we have a very large country, the problems in the border with the U.S. are very different than the problems that we have in central Mexico, or the ones that we have in the coast of the Gulf of Mexico, or in the border with Guatemala, where we have migrants coming in.
Right.
And there's this idea that militarization is going to solve all these questions.
Right.
Just doesn't.
And because you bring up migration or immigration, I mean, we've seen the ports, we've seen airports, we've seen train projects, so many things, as you alluded to earlier, coming under the purview, the control of this one entity. And you know, with that in mind, I saw also, you all seem like you want to jump in, but we also have people on YouTube chiming in. A lot of people kind of pointing to or asking questions about this sort of contradiction. Like, it seems that the military or the Navy and the Marines are the most trusted, but at the same time, this consolidation of power is the most dangerous thing maybe for the future of Mexico. Is that true? How do you marry those two realities?
I think that people do often trust more in the army because police are known to be very corrupt, but it doesn't mean that there's not corruption in the armed forces or violations of human rights. Also, there's been huge propaganda campaigns, including parades, putting military helicopters and doing face painting for children so that they believe in the military. And so the government, not just this government, but Mexican government for the past few decades has been propping up the military. Mm-hmm. But also, if we talk about corruption, we have the case of Ayotzinapa, of the 43 disappeared students that when they were attacked 8 years ago in the state of Guerrero. The government tried to say that it was just local police working with members of organized crime, but a very exhaustive investigation has shown that the army was involved and that the army, it is believed now that there was an army general that murdered six of these students.
Right.
And last year, when the head of the army was detained in the United States for alleged ties to drug trafficking,
right,
the Mexican government negotiated so that he would be let free and not actually be prosecuted. So there clearly is corruption and murder that happens at the hands of the military. Just last 2 weeks ago, a young girl was murdered on the border in Nuevo Laredo at the hands of the army.
Right. And of course, there are no explanations. I think you're referring to the five-year-old girl, which made headlines, but of course, no accountability, no real probing into how to prevent this in the future. I do want to ask you, when we know, for example, that the numbers simply don't lie. Some of you have shared some of the statistics with our audience. 200,000 federal troops now policing the streets as we speak, more than twice the number as under any predecessor. With that in mind, I want to share with you what one relative of a violent kind of attack had to say about the violence and how he frames and views this as he experiences it. Take a listen.
We live in a state of terrorism in a large portion of the country. There's terrorism in our country. There's an internal armed conflict that is creating terror, fear, and violence. We can't live in peace as all the Mexican people want. As the government doesn't want to acknowledge it, we ask the UN to officially recognize there's an internal armed conflict in Mexico.
Ana Lorena, do you think that that would help if the UN were to make that classification?
No, I think that what we need is to put effort in some other issues that Mexico is forgetting about. As I said that in my first opinion, the judicial power is very important during these moments. We have seen that the president, but also the parliament, has violated our constitution, and we need a very strong judicial power to make control in all the things that have been happening in our country. Mm-hmm. The other is that it's very well known in general in by the United Nations, but also for the Inter-American Human Rights Commission. They have clearly stated that armed force should only interview in public security in very temporary basis and in exceptional circumstances. Mm-hmm. Mexico is breaking that. Mexico is making a rule using the army for security tasks and for some other tasks.
Yeah.
For example, investigation. We are very worried, for example, that they are going to be part of the investigations. And we have seen, for example, represent victims of massacres and big migrants that have been disappeared.
Yeah.
And in the criminal investigation, what we have seen is that when the army is part of an investigation, they never let you have the information.
Right, of course. And of course, you know, we've seen this. Sorry, I don't mean to interject. I mean, we've seen this with governments who are averse to accountability, whether Mexico or Israel or what have you. It's a common pattern, right? And Catalina, to bring it back to sort of what the people can do, what can be done about this beyond sort of political opposition, I want to share with you some footage and what some of the protesters in Mexico City who were really protesting against the move to expand the judiciary and many things had to say. Take a listen, Catalina.
We don't want a militarized National Guard. We say no to a military state. We want to live in peace. We are already suffering from repression. We are already living in a silent war.
Catalina, you know, these protests that we see and this show and these conversations, what do you think is the first step to really trying to prevent this sort of consolidation of power? Is it too late?
I think in many ways it's too late. But I mean, right now, even at this moment, there's another proposal being talked of in the House of Chambers, where they're expanding the use of the military 5 more years for the federal government. Mm-hmm. I think people can write to their congressperson. We can also, you know, write on social media. We can go out on the street and protest again. Mm-hmm. But I really see that they just don't want to listen. And yeah. It's very worrisome because they're now ruling as if they would always be in power. And I mm-hmm. think something that has to be done is, you know, when you make laws, you have to imagine yourself as being on the other side of power, not on the mm-hmm. side of power. And I think somehow we need to make our legislators yeah. understand this.
You know, I want to share with you ladies, a lot of people paying attention in our YouTube chat, asking some questions. Maybe you can field them. Maddie D saying, why is the states and their guns influence not part of this important discussion? Obviously, for our audience who does not know, recently, I believe this year, cartels were in control of 4 major cities. We've often seen the justification for this militarization, as we've heard, you know, be due to that kind of cartel violence. But we also have someone asking another question, Corwin Chelway saying, since we've identified a serious problem and the panelists have made it clear that the solution is not military control, how do we kill corruption? How do we change the behavior of thousands of people? It feels like a lot of people getting to this question of it feels like there's nothing to be done. I mean, some people even asking, is it far-fetched to imagine a military coup as we've seen in many other South American countries? I mean, there's some nuance here, right? We're talking about the militarization of Mexico. But if I'm not mistaken, all in all, Mexico, relative to a lot of other countries nearby in that region, maybe has less of a role. The military is less of a kind of military dictatorship. How do you explain it?
Well, Andalusia? I think it's important, related to what you mentioned about weapons. It is important to note that actually the army, you could only possess weapons if you are a member of the army or police or armed forces in Mexico, that the population in general is not allowed to own or possess weapons. So it is true that all of the weapons that are used in crimes in Mexico are either illegally imported from the United States, or often they are of weapons that somehow they came from the army. But I think it's important to return to both of my compañeros here had said, is that mm-hmm. the judicial system in Mexico is incredibly weak. And it is not just corruption. It's because there are not enough resources. So mm-hmm. When a crime is being investigated, there are not enough forensic experts. There are not enough, even if they need to go and get different yeah. Test investigate every single part of the investigation, which I won't go on because it'll take yeah. too much time. Yeah. There's not enough resources. So that yeah. is why there's a 95% rate of impunity where crimes, people are never prosecuted. Yeah. People are not imprisoned. The case of Ayotzinapa that I mentioned, all of the hundreds of people that were arrested 8 years years later, they have not been prosecuted. They do not have sentences. And that's one of the most important cases in the country. So we are seeing that you can put more people that look like they're going to control the streets. But what happens if then they arrest someone and then they go to prison and they're immediately released?
Well, and because and because we talk about the judiciary as one of the main sort of flaws in this system, right, the weakness of the judiciary, I mean, what court challenges do you think we can expect to see? What is something tangible, Catalina, that you think in terms of criminal justice or public safety, like reforms? I know I just asked you this earlier. You said it was maybe too late. But I'm just trying to keep a little bit of hope alive. Is there perhaps a likeliness in your mind that there could be, you know, that we're heading in the trajectory of a military coup?
No, I mean, I think you're right in mentioning the courts and the importance of the courts. The Supreme Court has, for the past 6 years, they haven't been willing to solve the and to resolve on the limits of military action in Mexico. But I think with this last reform, it's going to be impossible for them not to make a case and to pronounce the law and establish the limits. I think in this case, where we're going to be having the military doing police work, but under military jurisdiction, the court is going to have to say something. And I think maybe part of the solution is, you know, making the judicial power say something and establish the limits.
Ana Lorena, do you agree with that?
Of course. I think I am putting my hope in the judicial power right now because the judge has to stop these reforms that are against the Constitution. I think it's very clear for all of us that what they have done is against the Constitution. And if we have a very strong judicial power, this should be simple. They just have to declare that these reforms are against the Constitution. I think we are going to be watching what are they going to do, and we are going to promote all the legal actions like the habeas corpus, the amparo, to make the court say something about it. And I think the Supreme Court is going to play a huge role right now in our country.
Yeah, well, much like your neighbor to the north, the Supreme Court recently playing a very big role in setting the sort of cultural tone here. Yeah, go ahead very quickly, Catalina.
Yeah, just very quickly. I just want to add something that is what you said about the coup. And I think the case of Mexico looks more like what has happened in Hungary or Turkey, where it's not just a coup that happened in the way that it happened in Chile or in Brazil, but something that, you know, little reforms took place. And then suddenly when you looked at all of the reforms as one big piece, then you have established an authoritarian state. And I think that's what we're seeing in the case of Mexico. So it's not going to be something like what we're looking for, as the story of Latin America has shown us, but something more to the liking of Hungary or Turkey.
Certainly. And just to share with you, we have in our YouTube chat, Vive Apria, saying, a solution could be direct oversight by an independent entity. The entity would need to be vigorously vetted annually. Obviously, whether or not that sounds great, but I don't know how feasible that is. But it seems like whether the judiciary, everyone's hoping for a little bit of that consolidation and sort of power grab to be somehow dissipated. Seems like the right way to go. Sorry, go ahead.
I'm sorry.
Quickly, we have to wrap. But last thought, go ahead, Lorena.
Sorry. What I was going to say is that we also have these commissions of human rights, the National Commission of Human Rights and the Local Commission of Human Rights.
Right.
Maybe they are not playing a very strong role in our country, but they should, because they should build a monitor mechanism to see all what is happening in our country in terms of human rights violations. So I think they should also play a big role in our country.
And obviously, you know, I've been to Mexico City. The police there are notorious for maybe caring more about bribes than crimes. There's so much more to this discussion. I do want to just share with you one. Stephanie Brewer, who focuses on human rights advocacy, she says this is not only violating the Constitution, as you've said, but she kind of frames it in the dire consequences that a lot of people worry about. Take a listen.
This reform is an alarming setback for justice and human rights in Mexico, because over a decade and a half of evidence shows that deploying the military in policing tasks does not improve public security. There's been very little accountability for the serious human rights violations committed by the Mexican military in recent years. And now this reform means that only the military will be carrying out federal policing tasks. and the reform itself openly violates Mexico's constitution. What Mexico needs are capable and accountable civilian security and justice institutions to investigate crimes, to solve crimes. What it does not need is to continue expanding the power and internal roles of its military.
I think we can all agree that it's the institutions that are needed that are missing. Ladies, thank you so much for your time. That's all the time we have for today, but you can always find us online at stream.aljazeera.com.